Sorry.
What are you doing? You're in the middle of hosting a podcast and you're TikToking?
I just opened it. I couldn't help myself.
Dale's a big Snapchatter. You can't help it.
You know what the irony is? I bet he makes comments about millennials being snowflakes all the time and spending too much time on their phones.
Nope. I had to snap Duggo. I did. I couldn't
Duggo Larson?
Yeah, I couldn't help myself.
Yeah.
So Dale deals with Larson's, like, you're their rep.
Okay.
You are their Dale?
Well, something.
We don't get too detailed about it.
Conversations.
Well, captain.
He's their tax management person. But I love, like, so he's got Snapchat so you can communicate with your children.
Yes, really, that's the only way they'll reply to me.
The best part is, so now since you're in this, not new role, it's been about a year, so Dale travels all over Kibble, and he's got location sharing turned on, so all the parts guys in Wheaton.
Like, hey, you're, bank, they know where I'm at.
Yeah, you're at. In Hollandale. Can you grab this part and bring it back?
Yeah, works pretty good.
So you want the location on because it's convenient, or you hate it?
I really don't.
Dale knows how to turn it off.
The kids turned it on so they know when I'm going to get home.
You didn't know how to accept the terms and conditions.
That's a good idea, though. So your kids will reply to you on Snapchat.
Yes.
How old are your kids?
25, 23, 22.
They're way 19. Older than mine.
Yeah.
But my kids, when I text them, it's very like one word responses. Yeah. And I'm just like,
if you can get them to reply.
Is that it? Mm-hmm. That's it? Like, hey. Yep. Have a great day. I love you. I wish I was at home. Yep. Okay.
Yep. No emotion.
Zero. Nothing.
I've been gone a long time. It's like an automated
reply.
I miss you. I'm excited to see you when I get home. Okay.
That's exactly okay. It.
Well, do you remember, though, when you had phones that were like, you got a certain number of text messages a month?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then you would text somebody and they would say, K. I'm like,
not counting.
You wasted a whole text for the letter K. These texts are worth gold to me. I have no money. I'm relying on my parents. Yeah.
That's like your generation's roaming map. Mine was the roaming map.
Oh, that connects with me more.
Yeah.
Roaming.
Because I got my first cell phone and my mom like gave me the map. Like, okay, if you're in this area and it says R or roaming on the thing, you do not.
Your mom was sharp. I learned the hard way.
How much was
you
the bill?
Made a few phone calls while you were near Canada. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was $360. All I did was call Derek. Yeah.
The first time.
It was a 1-900 number.
I was on my mom's.
She was a nice lady. Yeah.
Her name was Strawberry.
How dare you? Daryl is a great person.
My first bag phone was on my mom's plan.
My first bag phone.
Yep. Got it.
Yeah. Yep. And you're old. Tell me you're old.
Hold on. You're so old you had multiple bag phones?
I had two, and then I went to a StarTech Motorola. Mm-hmm. But the reason I went onto my own plan is I went home for New Year's, and it was the year 99 to 2000. And I lived right on the Montana-North Dakota border, so we celebrated it twice. We had New Year's Eve in North Dakota, then we drove across. Then my mom got the cell phone bill, and she could see every line. Like, it was phone calls, like, every 30 minutes from, like, 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. She's like, what are you doing? I'm getting my own cell phone plan. Okay, I think we should kick it
off. Now we can start the podcast.
Now we kick it off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can edit it in whenever?
No, you say it live.
Okay.
You ready? Live.
Ready.
Live from Houston.
Welcome to Everything Ag and Then Some, presented by Kibble Equipment, a frequently fun, usually informative, and always tangent-filled look into the industry that feeds the world. From cutting-edge John Deere technology to the impact of social media on the agriculture industry, no topic is off-topic.
Perfect. So we are in Houston in the breakfast nook of a hotel.
That is exactly where we are.
It's an upgrade.
Yeah, it's not. It's
that's
nice
true. Because nice the first place we tried it got a little weird.
We were going to do the podcast in Zach's hotel room, and then we realized all he had was an ottoman and no chairs.
And there was a tiger in the bathroom.
I trapped it.
Zach forgot about that.
It seemed better in my head when you asked if I had a table. I thought maybe I did. Oh, I did, but it's like fastened to the wall. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, we almost decided we were going to do the podcast on an ottoman sitting on the floor.
Like crisscross applesauce around an ottoman.
So we're in Houston. We're in a hotel lobby. And it is me, Kibble Man Sam, Boss Man Chris. Dale is back, which I should just call Dale Boss Man Dale, but he's not going to like that, and I don't think he'll put up with me.
No, because he does your performance reviews as of January 1st.
Yeah, Dale is now my boss. Chris isn't anymore.
You still call him that?
You've assumed an entity as Boss Man Chris.
Oh, it just happened.
Well, yeah. And you got license plates that say that.
It's like Boss Hog. I should. That would be the funniest part to get my
Boss Man.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm writing that down. Well, even though I hate it.
Got cattle horns on your
hood. On the front.
Yeah. Or you could be
actually, you just do that when he's eating lunch someday. Just screw some horns to his hood.
A brand new pickup.
Yeah. I got Power Guard. That's fine.
Dale's on. You're on your second show.
Good evening.
We try to keep track in case we ever get to five. We'll get you a jacket.
Okay.
But yeah. You're going to have to buy it. All right. It's going to be on my expense report.
Five timers club.
And then we also have a special guest, Zach, the actor who portrays the millennial farmer, Johnson Esquire the III.
That's mostly correct, yeah. I don't know about the Esquire part, but the actor part.
Do you know what movie that's from? No. Esquire the III? Bill S. Preston, Esquire the III?
Hold on, it's coming to me. Is this Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Or Excellent Adventure?
Wow. Well, both.
Both of them.
Nice. Both.
Nice. Yeah. That's like double points there. That's
yeah, well, that is super old school.
So Bogus Journey is mostly panned, like it's the sequel.
Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious.
So Keanu was in now, right?
Yeah.
Which one was it where they fell? They were falling down into hell.
And that
they
was
were
Bogus
like,
Journey.
They were in the darkness just like, whoa. No, and then they had to stop and take a breath. And then they continued screaming. So when I was a kid, I thought that was so funny.
Which one was Keanu, Bill or Ted?
That was
he was Ted.
How'd you like being Bill right now?
Theodore.
I don't even know who he is.
Theodore. Theodore and Williams, Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
But one of the funniest scenes in, I think, cinema film history is when Bill and Ted have to play the devil in board games.
Yes. Two out of three.
Two out of three, and then he loses, and he's like, best 5 out of 7. You're damn right it is.
I can't believe it. I do not have that movie on my I have a list, a Google Sheet list of movies to watch with my boys.
And that's not on there?
It's not on there.
And the devil in that movie is George Carlin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's okay. That's like a really good
man. So I was thinking here that we're probably the only two people in Texas right now that know the movies you're talking about, but you know the actors and everything.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this movie since 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the phone booth that was the time machine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, nobody listening knows this, right?
I bet they do.
But it's funny. If you were to go back and watch that movie, which hopefully you do, you're going to be like, that's Keanu Reeves, and that's how he got started. Mm-hmm. He's like a stoner.
Yeah.
Time traveling.
Yeah, man.
Which is a perfect Keanu Reeves character.
That's my best Keanu Reeves impression.
It was pretty good. Yeah,
the head bob is good for radio, too.
So this is going to be a purely informational podcast episode for those of you listening. It's going to get a little dry at times because it's going to be really on topic, mostly about product.
Hopefully. Yeah. I really just want to talk about new technology
and
efficiencies.
We're going to hammer that home.
Yep. Yeah.
And the value. Got to remember the value.
Yeah, the return.
The ROI. Yep. Yep. ROI is going to be a big topic. That's the title of the podcast, ROI.
We've all been programmed.
You are really grabbing attention there.
But we are going to talk about the show. So we've been at Commodity Classic now for 2 days, and it was the John Deere product launch. So I'm guessing when I edit these, this will probably, I don't know which order I'm going to edit them in, but we did do a couple episodes with representatives from Deere. And they were really good.
They're really good. Got them out of their comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah, we did. We pushed them out of their comfort zone a little bit, especially Kramer.
You did. Mm-hmm. Like the suited guys?
Yeah. They weren't wearing pants.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Things got weird, huh? That's why we're not in the deer booth.
You'll edit that.
I'm not.
Please don't edit that.
I'm going to leave that right in. So, Zach, you probably didn't get to see the space suits.
So, I saw one space suit and I believe it was a girl on stilts walked by yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
They went one direction, and they came back the other direction. I had no idea what it was about, but I was...
Yeah, I got a picture with them.
So there was also, remember the guy, I don't remember if I was standing with you or not, but there was just a random guy like in the stairwell spinning a lasso.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Buttless chaps.
Are they paying this guy to just stand here and lasso?
Or did he have a Venmo code on his chest or nothing? It's like, I didn't.
Do I give him a dollar?
I don't know. He didn't
so
have
you
a
guys,
bucket.
You weren't doing any drugs?
No, straight up. Why did you have a lasso in the lobby? I don't know.
Why are you on a ladder?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't on a ladder. He was just lassoing air.
Did he get it?
You seen it, right?
Yeah. I was confused because I was like, are they paying this guy to be here? Or is he just like this kind of his pastime? Yeah.
Was this a passion. John Deere thing?
No, I don't know.
Or just like.
It was at the show, like mm-hmm. but out in the like hallways in the lobby.
By
area.
The escalator.
It's the same thing as the spacesuit person in the.
Yeah.
You didn't ask him like, no. Who do you work for?
Are you on a commission pay plan?
No, because I didn't want to get lassoed. Who does number two work for? I didn't want him to catch me.
Yeah, you can't really run away from a guy with a lasso.
Yeah, but why didn't I take a picture with the stilts lady?
No.
I could have done the old head-to-head.
Yeah.
Eye-to-eye.
That would have been good.
Mm-hmm. But you bring up the product introduction for John Deere.
The product launch.
Yeah. It's funny how it has changed, you know.
From the intro days.
The old, you know, it was kind of introduced to us as, you know, we're bringing back intro. Yeah. That used to be like 2.5 days of just awesomeness because you got together with all your old dealer friends and stuff, but it definitely was a little bit different this year.
Yeah, it's been since 2013 or 2014?
2015.
15 was Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Milwaukee.
I think 2014, and it's either 2014 or 2013, was Columbus. That was the last intro I was at.
Yeah. And then Milwaukee was
then
the
Milwaukee,
last.
Milwaukee yeah. was Milwaukee. The last one.
Yep. It's Algonquin for
But the good land.
So that was like 9 years ago, though, right? Or mm-hmm. Yeah, right? That my math checks out. 9 years ago was the last, and that was a standalone event. It mm-hmm. wasn't tied into a farm show like this one right. is.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it was an annual thing for decades.
Yeah.
Every year, we
mid-August.
Yep.
This had to be like well-attended. It sounds like there's a lot of people going to these.
Yeah. Well, the deer dealers used to send their sales force, basically.
Okay. You know? Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot has changed since 14 or 15, you know, in the sales force in general and the John Deere dealers. But
well, it's part of the challenge is you go to the show.
Yeah.
And it was fun. They get jazzed up about selling stuff.
Oh, man.
But sometimes, okay, here's the new 8 series tractor and you can't order it for 9 months. Or here's something that they sat on for 9 months because they had to wait for intro. Yep. So
and
now
you
it's
all actually knew about it. Or not?
No, they just sit on it. Everything would be lined up at the same time.
You know, back, you got it. So, like, my first intro was in 1996, and internet didn't exist, obviously. So, you literally had no idea.
How many bag phones did you go through in your life? Two.
The batteries they lasted quite a bit, but.
Yours had battery?
Yeah.
Mine had a battery, but you had to have power to
it. It had that slender battery on along.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
This is the youngest I've felt in a while.
Yeah. This is the oldest I've felt. I've been trying to keep
Sorry
up to young
that.
Guys for the last 2 days in this town.
Oh, my goodness. That's the other part of intro, networking.
Oh,
right?
Just getting to see all your other dealer friends through the years, you know. And it was that was probably the biggest thing. You came back from intro to your dealership knowing everything was there. The sales manual stuff was sent to you within a day or two because it was all paper back then. And you'd have this UPS big jacket of paper with all the product information in it. So it was pretty cool.
Did you study that? Study that
on
book?
Tractors? I did tractors and combines. That was
did
my
you?
Bread and butter. Yep.
Nice.
Yep. That was a pretty big deal.
So they
your nice was the South Park nice.
Nice.
But yeah, no. But I think the Corona, like even today. So what's cool is it's that commodity classic here.
Yep.
And I stumbled upon a guy that used to work for John Deere dealership in Wisconsin. Now he's working for a third-party company that ties into Operations Center. And I'd kind of thought about it in the past, like me using this tool. And, yeah, just, like, bumped into him. And, like, so if I would probably wouldn't have made the next step without the networking part. That wasn't as fun as it came off.
Well, so, you know, I'd probably
nice.
Add just a hair to what you're saying, Chris, is, you know, it's like I walked quite a bit of today into the booths and whatnot, and it's definitely interesting how agriculture has changed through the years. You know, this show is not a hard iron show. I mean, it's a lot of seed. It's a lot of chemical products, micronutrients and AI. Holy smokes for AI. You know, a lot of little tech companies that add stuff.
Are you talking about cattle or?
No.
Oh.
Artificial intelligence.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Speaking of AI, I had a good AI story from J-Doug,
the conference
I was at before. And I was talking to a company that uses AI to like create videos for social media, basically. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting. And he's like, yeah, and a lot of marketers are looking at AI and thinking it's going to take our jobs. And I piped in and I said, yeah, like that good South Park bit.
It took our jobs.
They took his dog?
They took his dog. Well, it's no different than like the buggy whip thing, you know? Like when you got cars and now there's no more buggy whips, people have to make buggy whips.
What is a buggy whip?
Thank you, Sam.
Well, you have a horse in a carriage and you need a whip to whip the horse to move forward. So there was like a thing like, oh, cars are going to take away all the manufacturing of buggies and buggy whips.
Oh,
you sure. know, because if the horse didn't move, your bag phone would go dead.
Yeah. Had a little resistance.
It's a great
quote. Back in 1994.
It's a great quote from Henry Ford.
And here was our favorite bit in the podcast, Chris's obscure history references.
Yeah, good at that.
It sounded a lot cooler in his head.
What was the coolest thing you saw at Commodity Classic? Doesn't necessarily have to be in the deer booth, although you only spent time in two booths.
You're putting this on me?
Yeah. You, Zach.
I have legitimately seen almost nothing at the show yet. I would say the coolest thing I saw, I mean, I can't really go against my own planter being at the show. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's your planter?
Yeah.
Oh.
You're doggone right. That's my planter.
And it's got ExactShot on it, right?
Yeah. Well, so it was pretty cool to see ExactShot working. They got the girl working there and she runs through the whole how ExactShot works and like the savings on it. And then they have the demonstration of she starts with the seeds coming out and then she turns on the ExactShot so you can see it pulsing. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to need that display for FarmFest. We're just shopping. We're shopping for displays.
So being you didn't get to see a lot of the show, but yes. I got a hunch you probably talked to a lot of people today.
Yeah.
What were some of the cool conversations you had?
Can I guess how most of them went?
Yes.
My kid really likes your YouTube videos.
So far, you're on track.
I watch some of them every once in a while when he's already watching them, and I just catch it out of the corner of my eye. But I remember this really specific thing you did one time in a video from 5 years ago. I thought that was really great.
When you were replacing XYZ part on your...
You guys nailed it. Yeah. I don't watch your videos. I just catch them when my kid watches, except I watch every single one of them all the time.
That baffles me, though, that people are like embarrassed to be a fan of your videos sometimes. Not all people, right? Some people are like, I really love your videos. I think you're great, blah, blah, blah. But there's some people that are just so embarrassed to like... be a fan of somebody on YouTube that they have to qualify it for 30 seconds. Like, well, I don't really watch your videos that much. I don't watch a lot of you. I don't have any time to watch YouTube, but sometimes I see your videos. I know who you are, kind of. I kind of know what your name is. Your name's like Zach or Zimmy. What's your name? Mm.
But I can empathize because I get that like weird feeling like, last night, you know, at the piano bar, like, I don't want to bother you, but I want to say hi, you know.
That's a purely Minnesota thing,
yeah,
though.
But today I saw Mary Pat's ass, but because of my experience with you now, like everything, I'm like, but hey, just went up like, hey, enjoy watching your stuff on Instagram. It's fun. Yeah. You know, just quick compliment and move on. You know?
Oh. Well.
They were doing a leap year bit. Her husband's got on all fours and she in front of the new X9.
It was like we did in the hotel room before we got here. Yeah. Some leapfrog stuff.
I forgot the twister board upstairs.
Oh, science point. Yeah.
That was a very unexpected comment from you.
Yeah.
But then she jumped over his back, and I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And she's like, it's leap year. I'm like, or leap day. Like, oh.
It's leap day?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is like a free day.
Yeah. It's.
I'll be dipped.
Didn't have to submit
just
PTO
if you
or
had your birthday today.
Yeah.
You only get one every 4 years.
Every 4 years.
I'll be dipped.
That's how Chris is only 45.
Yeah.
He was born on leap day.
Yeah.
He's actually like 135. Yeah.
Moses used to babysit him, but he's doing pretty good.
Moses was a good man.
Yeah, he was. But, you talk about the YouTube stuff. So my son, he got us a Google TV, and we always had the Roku or however
you know said. That's just a regular TV, yeah, right?
I know, but it, but what I'm saying is
basic equipment, Dale.
The Google thing is now when I turn on this new TV because it's part of Google. Every time I just scroll through just a little bit of a YouTube video, it's on my damn TV feed. So now I get sucked in it for an hour and a half watching these YouTube videos. So
they're good at that.
Yeah,
they're very good at that.
Yes.
And one of our old coworkers, he was here today, he's a farmer, and he brought it up over beers one time. It's like, so I go farm all day long, and then I go home and I watch other guys farm. What the hell's wrong with me?
On my Google TV.
On my Google TV.
I don't know. It's just when you turn it on, Google's right there. That's not the...
It is definitely a special television
that
Google sold to your children.
All right. I don't know. It's big. I really like it.
We just need to get the chat snapper on there first.
Yeah.
I hate to ask you this question, but I'm going to ask you one of the questions you hate. Do you really not get sick of talking about your height? You told me yesterday it doesn't bother you at all. I don't believe you.
I wouldn't say it doesn't bother me a lot. There's times when it bothers me when it's just nonstop.
Yeah.
I can't move sometimes. Like, I went to Bacon Fest. Is a big deal.
Is a big deal.
Yeah, in Des Moines. It's really fun, but it's just a bunch of drunk idiots. And so they just can't stop asking me how tall I am. Now, I'll flip that because that also happens at bars a lot. And when I was in my 20s, when I used to, drink a little bit.
How short are you?
I'd go to a bar and I would turn this into my favor. People would ask me, drunk people have no filters, so they would ask me how tall I am, just nonstop. And so I would tell them, I will tell you if you buy me a beer. And there would be nights I'd go to the bar, have to pay for a beer.
That's a great way to spin that.
Yeah. So it works in my favor. It doesn't bother me a lot because it's just part of my everyday, so it bothers me less. Just part of it.
It's the cross you bear.
Yeah. It's a tough life for me out there.
I'm going to be honest with you. It bothers me a little bit. Just like... when I stand with you at a booth, when there's three people in 15 minutes that mention your height, yeah, we get it. The dude lives with it. He knows how tall he is.
I was born with it.
The cross that I bear.
So I need to ask you guys now, and we're going to just spin this into completely talking about deer technology now.
Oh, are we transitioning from everything egg to off the husk now?
I suppose, yeah.
You're hosting? All right.
Yeah.
Do the intro.
We never had an intro. No def on this tractor.
No def and no filter. No dosing. No DPF.
So did they just explain to me why it doesn't need it, how that works? I mean, don't get too technical.
Call your congressman. So
yeah,
when
I will.
So the smallest model is 710 horsepower, right? Mm-hmm. But the bulge is over 750 horse. So it's in a different category.
He said bulge.
Anybody else get that?
I got it. Yeah. That's Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, yeah.
You were going for Family Guy.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Different generations.
Yeah, different, yep. See, I'm a bridge.
He had headphones.
So there's metrics on the particulate matter and the nitrous oxides that can go out of the tank or out of the exhaust. See, this is my issue. But there's different categories, different horsepower levels. So since this engine is above this category, 750 horse, that is one part of it. But then also Deere engineered the engine. Their default mode is like, if we can avoid DEF, we might have to have the filter, the diesel.
Particular filter
in certain areas. But this one is like the way they designed it. It meets the regulations for Final Tier 4. No DEF.
That's interesting.
Because the other competitor, it's like 84 gallon DEF tank. For the quad track,
something like that.
At that, did they go up to that horsepower though?
They had 715.
715.
But the way they design the engine, it needs DEF. You love taxes, you love subscriptions, and you love DEF.
Those are three things I love a lot. Yep. I really do. Yep. You seem like you ranked them in order. Also, you've had this conversation before.
When you go into a sales call, you got to plan for the objections up front. You have to be bombarded with like sponsorship or endorsement requests. Like,
yes.
So, like, how do you vet all that out? Like, how does that work? You can share as much or as little as you want.
Yeah, in the beginning, I mostly just said yes to everything because it was like, well, yeah, you know, every opportunity you take advantage of. And then it kind of turned into this, it was way too much. And I had to kind of learn how to say no to a lot of people and a lot of opportunities where it was like, you have to figure out what's actually worth your time and where this is all going and what I wanted to spend my time on. So we've pretty well, we've done a good job of narrowing it down now where we work with just a few, very few different companies that are companies we have worked with anyway, on the farm, stuff that kind of fits what we're doing regardless. And that's kind of the way we keep it. So you find very polite ways to say no, or you can also just ignore.
That's usually my method.
Just ignore.
Just ignore.
It is the easiest.
But then they just keep emailing.
You can like block them.
I don't know if you saw my last 16 emails, but I just wanted to let you know about this opportunity. I'm like, oh my God, get a hint.
It's funny to me because that is so real. Hey, just wanted to push this to the top again. Haven't heard from you. Yeah, it's been 3 months. You email me twice a week. You haven't heard from me because I'm not interested.
Is it a, like in your case, you know, now you kind of got a brand.
Yeah.
You know, is that part of your decision?
If I was to work to add another company to the list, I guess, or another another partner, team member. Is that what we have to say now?
Ally.
It would have to be somebody that, for one, it makes sense to actually work with on the farm, and for two, is good to work with in general. So, like, the people involved with it have to be good to work with. Because I've worked with some companies where I work with them on the farm already, and the whole idea of adding that product and you know, pushing that on the platform makes sense. But the people behind it are very difficult. Like, it's, there's a lot of expectations, I guess, that are, that just complicate things. Mm-hmm. And that's not worth it.
Yeah.
Well, what do you say to the people that would say, like, oh, man, like, because I see them on your YouTube videos, like, if you're talking about, you know, the Simply Safe deal or something, they're like, oh man, I used to like this channel before Zach was such a sellout.
Yeah.
What do you say to that guy?
The first thing I would say, which is a good, it sounds like a sales pitch, but it's also true, is that if I don't sell out a little bit, I'm going to just get sick of making videos. You're not going to get the videos. So I put out a 20-minute video and 60 seconds of it is talking about Simply Safe or whatever. Do you want the other 19 minutes or not? I mean, you'd sell out for a lot less.
Well, we hear that too. We have some customers that are in the same space as you, and like some people are like, oh, they got this for free or they got that for free. And like, well, just, you could do it.
Yeah.
You could try anyway.
Yeah, start a channel and make 800 videos and talk to a few million people, and maybe you'll get some stuff too.
But that's died down. It's definitely died down because I went back when we first, you know, let's just go back to like that TrueSat video with the 2730.
Back where we like retrofitted it onto a...
Which, that was a fun video.
Yeah, I should go back and watch it again.
John Deere did not like all the That's What She Said jokes. I'll tell you that much.
But that's what makes my videos relatable.
That used to be like a big part of your videos though. There was a That's What She Said joke like
I need to bring that
multiple
times
back in the videos, yeah. But
I'm good at Michael Scott.
but then, you know, and this is when I worked for Deere, but when I would go to the Glenwood store, a lot of times I wasn't even there to see Zach. I was there to like see Ron and we're, you know, fixing something or whatever. And then I just, every time I walk in the store, it would be like, well, Sam's here. I guess Zach's getting some more free stuff. Sure wish I could farm for free. And they would say it so I could hear it. And then I would turn around and be like, hey, you know what? I'm, first of all, not here for that. But second of all, go ahead and do it. You go ahead and get 500,000 subscribers on a YouTube channel, and I'll bring you all sorts of stuff. And we didn't bring that much stuff out there. I mean, a lot of it.
Well, that's the thing is, I've, you know, people say that stuff at the stores.
Right.
Like, you hear way more of that than me, because most people won't say that in front of me. But I know that it's happening, and I do know that it was worse 5 years ago than it is now. But I still get questions. I was getting questioned at... Farm Progress Show back in September. There was multiple guys that came up and were talking to me about all the free stuff that I was getting from the manufacturers, right? And I'm like, that no, I didn't get that for free. Like, I owe a lot of money on that. And they're like, well, yeah, but there's not really a but. I borrowed a ton of money to buy that. Like, what's the but? What do you know that I don't? Please go ahead. Tell me about my finances right now while you're in line to shake my hand.
They also assume you get a lot more for free than you actually do.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, they're assuming like it's $0 for me to farm.
So Dale, like with the whole social media, like, cause you work with Larson's, right?
Yes.
Yep. And then like, what have you seen as like change with this whole social media part?
You know, I would say the thing that I like about the social media side is it has brought a side of agriculture that people don't see. And I look at, you know, a lot of the people that are, and you could contest this, Zach, that you probably get people from New York, Chicago, whoever that might be, that have nothing to do with the farm, but they're getting to experience what a farm is that they would never see if it wasn't for the social media platform.
Yeah.
And because I grew up in the 90s and ag was not cool. I mean, it was, you were stupid if you were going into ag. I mean,
Well, my dad specifically told me you're not coming back to farm.
Don't do ag, and I did it anyway because I was stupid. Who was that?
Barbara Mandrell, who's saying I was...
Country when country wasn't cool.
Yeah.
With George Jones.
Was that Barbara Mandrell?
Yes.
Oh, my God, I got it right.
Are we going back to the piano bar tonight?
How old are you, Sam?
I think I'm about 103.
But that's what I would say is I think that's what the social media side of it is. I look at all the young kids that, you know, that kind of see you as a role model or whoever this might be. You know, I the one thing that I don't want to do a shameless plug, but I really enjoy like Sunny Farms because those guys work their ass off every day taking care of cattle, and that's a side of livestock that you don't see
right
every day, which you got to tend to. And I think if we didn't have that from an agricultural standpoint, if we didn't have that viewpoint for other people can see that this is a viable living. We're not destroying the environment. We're not, you know, anti everything. That's where I think this social media is so powerful is for guys like you to tell your story. You're just like everyone else, but, and then the young kids see that farming is cool because it wasn't that way when I was young.
Yeah. That has been, I don't want to sound too cliche or too sappy here, but that is like the most rewarding compliment that I get from people at these shows when you meet somebody you've never met before and they tell you about their kids that are watching the social media and all of a sudden they've decided that farming is cool, you know, because it's on social media and they see it in a little bit of a different way and they've decided they're going to come back home and farm now. And I have had parents that have told me that like you played a hand in this, like the social media farmers had a major hand in this. And making my son or daughter think that agriculture is cool again.
Yep.
Because I'm kind of with you. You know, when you mentioned you grew up in the 90s and agriculture wasn't cool, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah. Even in like the rural areas where I went to school, it was a whole different feeling. Yep. And I feel like now I'm not in school, clearly. I've been out of it for a couple of years now. But I feel like there's a lot of... The kids out there and the schools that I've been involved with in whatever way, it just seems like agriculture has a way different feel now than it did when I was going to school.
Yep. It's so needed, you know, and it's about the only thing that we've got left as our rural identity is that farm, you know, and that's
right.
And that's, you know, and I put so much energy back into the school districts and, you know, and you look at these young kids today, I think they're really starting to figure out that you can make a good living just going to a 2-year vocational school or even a 1-year trade school, whatever that might be. You know, you don't have to spend that 4 or 5 years at a university to come back and make $36,000, you know.
Dale just described my career.
You went to an Ivy League. Was it Ivy League or what was that? What was that school?
Yeah.
Gustavus. Yeah, I went to a private liberal arts school and then I got out and I didn't make a lot of money answering the phone for John Deere.
No, but back to like the when I was in a high school, I had like
in a high school.
It was it's
in, Italian in, Christmas in
the,
came out
in the high school.
When I was in a high school,
I had
back in the day.
Back, yeah, I had like written like in the yearbook. I have to go back and see if I can find my yearbook. It's like, I'll never live in a town that the tallest building is not the grain elevator. And I lived in Minneapolis for 6 months.
That had the cadence of a joke.
If I have to explain that it's supposed to be a joke, then it's not a joke.
Let's talk piano bars here. So I've gone to a few.
Dale's a big fan of piano bars.
Talented people in this and that. Like last night, they were okay, but they didn't like blow your doors off entertaining good.
I would agree.
We were in Kansas City like a month or so ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a mix of like two girls and three guys in that rotation that they do.
So basically Chris's high school graduating class.
Yeah, that too. And they were entertaining. I mean, man, it wasn't a huge crowd like it was last night. But
are we going to glance over the fact that Chris did croaky?
You pronounced it correctly.
And it's definitely not correct, but I'm just going along with thank it you. For your sake.
Yeah.
Karaoke.
So there's two words.
That was way closer.
Milwaukee. So there's two words. I grew up in northwestern North Dakota. There's two words that we pronounce that are different than anywhere else. One is Lake Sakakawea. Lake Sakakawea. It's not Sacagawea. And then it's not karaoke. It's karaoke. And I can't explain the origin why.
Well, that's like duck, duck, gray duck.
Yeah, Minnesota's yeah, that. That's only Minnesota.
That was so they didn't even do that in North Dakota? They don't call it duck, duck, gray duck?
No, it's duck, duck, goose. Every state, I've lived in six states. Every state is, or seven states. Every state's, it's duck, duck, goose.
And people can have their opinions, but they're wrong. Duck, duck, gray duck is so much more fun of a game than duck, duck, goose. And I will explain why quickly. Mm-hmm. Because it was so fun to walk around. Because as long as you didn't say gray duck, you kept going. So you could go duck, duck, gray zebra.
Mm-hmm.
Duck, duck, gray elephant. And you could keep going. But as soon as you say duck, duck, guh, if you're playing duck, duck, goose, that guy's getting up and he's chasing you down. You're done. I just thought duck, duck, gray duck is much more tactical of a game. Minnesotans are smarter than most people, and yeah, and that game is a great representation of that. So.
Well, I'm just happy.
I've never heard it defended so well.
That was actually good. That's the best explanation.
That was very well.
From a theory, like a technical manual, theory of operation, that's really good. And I'm very happy that you just diverted and we didn't talk about my karaoke anymore.
Well, so Chris's karaoke, was You Never Even Call Me By My Name by David Allan Coe.
Yeah.
And this is your song.
Yeah.
That's your song. I've seen you do it. I saw you do it at karaoke in Kansas City. And you were like Maury out there. You were like Donny Osmond out in the crowd. You were singing in people's faces. It was
it was awesome.
The hardest I've laughed in a long time. And watching you do that song, because you love it. You can tell you love it so much. So, Zach, I got to ask burning questions. These are burning questions from your YouTube audience, probably. Are you getting sick of doing YouTube videos?
Overall, no. I still do enjoy it. Everything that comes with it. But yeah, there's times when I don't want to be carrying the camera around and thinking all day about what the next clip needs to be to try to piece together the story of the day. Because it's like there's always two jobs going. Number one, I'm farming, but I always have the internal dialogue within my head that's trying to keep track of what the last clip was and what I need to take next in order to make sure it makes sense to the viewers. Because if I miss something critical, like where we move fields or we do whatever, XYZ, like the story has to make sense to them. And we have a very notebook style of filming and editing, so if I don't have that in there, then it doesn't make sense to the viewers, and it won't make sense to the editing.
Who does editing?
My wife.
Oh.
Yeah, so it won't make sense to her either.
Then us.
No, so she does all the editing. Like
90% of it.
Yeah, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I told this guy, like for this podcast. Like, can we outsource the editing of this podcast? Because you spend a lot of time on it. It's usually like at night.
Uh huh.
You know, so. You know.
I'm like a single parent. I wash and dry. If you're hearing this podcast, it's because I planned it and then I hosted it and then I dragged all this crap to Houston and then I edited it and I posted it.
So I brought up the idea, like, can you outsource this? There's other people. And he's like, eh.
I have trust issues. That's my problem. Oh, man,
do I know that feeling. Just the sound he made of, eh, that is like the most said word in my head.
It's hard for me to think about handing this off to somebody because yes. I think my editing is like a signature thing. Like, I don't think I could hand this off to somebody else and they could do as good of a job as I do. And it's not that they're not good at editing. It's that I know what I want to hear and I know how I want it to sound.
Well, and our industry is like jargon is like somebody that wasn't familiar with the industry right. wouldn't know what the hell three letter acronym were thrown out and like all that. Yeah.
There's things I've cut out of podcasts that are fantastic information. But when I'm listening,
I know there's some things that I thought would really be killer and you cut it up.
Yeah. Sorry. No. Not sorry.
Just two beers later.
Because I'll listen to this podcast and then when I'm listening to it, if I start to feel my interest fade, then I start thinking about I need to cut something out. Because if I'm fading, everybody 100%. Else is going to fade.
The way you just described that about it being your podcast and your style, and if you hand it off, it's not going to be the same. That's exactly how I felt when Becky started editing the videos because it's like, this is my artwork.
Yeah.
Even though I'm just taking this little notebook clips of what I'm doing during the day, I know how the day went. I know how it should be pieced together. And I've done the first 100 videos. Like, I have a style. I'm the Picasso of these videos. Yeah, you can't just bring in a different artist and try to paint my stuff.
They're not, definitely Picasso is the right form. It's a mess.
Yeah. But you said it right there. Like in your head, it's your artwork. You can't expect someone else to paint it in the same way. So I get it. I completely get that.
And I think the success of this podcast has been a lot to do with how it is edited and what the final form comes out as. Because there's been some podcasts that we have recorded that I listened to the first time and I'm like, that sucked. But then when you edit it, you're like, that works. That's
good.
You
can piece it together correctly.
Yeah.
Yep.
When you started this,
yeah,
did you ever envision that it would get to where it's at today?
Absolutely not. No. This was when I started it, it was 100% about just trying to reach some people and show them what exactly is going on in rural America.
Okay.
And it was because I was hearing stuff about farming from people that were, from my area, people that I even knew. One of them specifically even was a family member. It was like they were talking about GMOs and,
yes.
and pesticides and drain tile and yep. the way livestock are treated. And it's just, as a farmer, it was so frustrating to see them putting that out there and people agreeing with it. And it's like, well, yeah, we use genetically modified seeds. We spray pesticides. We have certain ways we treat livestock, but here's why we use those practices, what we know about it. Here's the reason we do these things. And it was 100%, it was nothing more than a hobby about trying to reach people about mm-hmm. what's really going on.
And that, like those first, let's say, first five videos or however you got started.
Yeah.
How did you do that? I mean, like, what was that? You something triggered in your head of it's like you actually hit record and I'm going to do this. What was that?
So the idea was I had it for 2 years before I actually started with it. And for whatever reason in my head, I had it in my head that if I am to start this channel, it has to be in the spring. Because what I wanted to do from the very beginning of the idea was one growing season. So I had to start it in the spring. Like I had to start in the spring when we're about ready to plant, and then like when we're done harvesting, my YouTube channel's over. Like there's a whole year of farming. Like, see, there it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I had the idea for a couple of years, and I remember having a specific discussion with a specific person online, and I was just pulling my hair out. I was so frustrated over it, and my wife was like, well, I mean, just... Because I think I had mentioned the YouTube idea to her, but I think I had mentioned it to her probably that day. And she's like, well, just start the channel. If you don't like it, you can just get rid of it. You know, I think she was sick of me mentioning it as an idea and not doing it. And so I did it. Mm-hmm. And it was like my first video within a few days had like 600 and some views, mm-hmm. which was, well, I didn't expect a dozen people to watch. So it was motivating to keep going.
That's so Becky pushed you.
Yeah.
That's she awesome.
Did, yeah.
Like, but you also never thought that you were going to make money off YouTube. I have to imagine that wasn't, because you probably didn't even know you could make money off YouTube.
No, never. So I knew that there were people making money off YouTube, but I assumed you had to get so massive before you'd make a little bit of money that it was never a thought in my head that I'd ever, you know, be somebody who would make money off YouTube.
The funny thing for me, though, because when people ask me about my origin story of social media, I always go back to you. You're the reason that I am where I am now. It's all you.
So like, when Zach calls you, like, is the ringtone my hero?
Did you ever know that you're my hero?
I'm just curious.
What song is that?
The Wind Beneath My Wings.
Oh, I thought it was Enrique Iglesias.
I could be your hero, baby.
I thought it was Dale S. Preston Esquire.
I'm not kidding though. It's an interesting thing that, like, all of a sudden changed my whole career path. Mm-hmm. Was that because I was getting frustrated with the fact that I'm driving out, let's say I'm driving 4 hours and I visit one customer and then I fix one thing or I find out one thing and I'm like 100 other guys.
Nobody else knows.
200 other guys could benefit from this information, but I'm always just driving out to one guy fixing one problem and then driving home, and that was my whole day. And I thought, God, there's got to be a way to broadcast this information. And so I started to look into that, like, just as an idea, like, how can I, like, can I make YouTube videos and can I do this and that? And then I started to look at what you were doing, and I'm like, he's hitting hundreds of thousands of people with these YouTube videos. Like, how could I somehow just get involved with that? And I met you one time. So this is actually really funny. I met you one time, wasn't in a YouTube video, nothing. Like, and I didn't want to be.
Ryan brought you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went out with Ryan because you had bought a new field cultivator. I thought, well, this will be a good, like, PR touch point. I'll come out, I'll be deer guy, and I'll give him a couple hats. And then you came to me and you were like, nobody's ever given me hats before. Not from John Deere.
Really?
No one from
John Deere. Really?
That's real.
Oh, John Deere. Oh. But you got dealership hats.
Nope.
What?
No, oh, but
no way.
I guess in statement. Their defense, I was, that was 5 years ago, six?
Yeah, probably five. It was like 2018.
I personally had not purchased much equipment yet.
Oh, okay.
But I think.
So Dad was getting the hats.
And he was probably turning them down. But at the same time, I remember my dad's joke back in the day being that he bought a ton of stuff from the local dealers. And then he bought a Gearinghoff corn header one year, and they mailed him a leather jacket for Christmas. So every single time, every single time he would go into the deer dealer, he would wear his leather Gearinghoff jacket.
My dad would do the same thing. Not leather jackets, but we'd go to one New Holland dealer because we had a New Holland MoCo, and they'd give him a hat. And then my dad would go into the Haugen's Implement in Willis, North Dakota with a New Holland hat on, and they would take it off his hat.
Give him a different hat.
Do it, yeah. Yep. So it was a strategy. He's like, okay, we're going to go for, you know, back to home.
Trading up.
We're going to go an hour and a half drive to the New Holland dealership to get parts and then get a hat so they can get a free John Deere hat later.
Well, the funny thing about, though,
I just can't believe, sorry.
It really was. Those hats he gave me, one of them was the 2660.
2230. I gave you a 2660 hat. But
yeah, I definitely have a 2660 hat.
So the one that you wore a bunch in videos was the 2230 hat, which it's funny because our marketing girl hated those hats. She thought they were super gaudy and, like, ugly.
The gray and green?
Yeah.
And you wore that hat.
You love that hat. And you wore it a bunch. And the funny thing is, like, the first couple videos you wore that hat in, people were trying to figure out where the hell you got that
should
hat.
Should have got a merch link. Get a merch link.
And I was getting calls. This was legitimately the start of, I didn't understand the reach you had until I started to experience it. And I was getting calls from dealers all over the place that were like,
hey, where's that damn hat?
I had a customer call me. They were watching Millennial Farmer YouTube videos, and there was a John Deere tillage hat on there. It's a 2230 hat. And this customer's like two kids or whatever. They want that hat real bad. Can I get a couple of them? And I go, does he own a 2230? No. then they're not getting the hat. I've only got like 20 or 30 of them. Like, it's not, I don't have a lot.
They're very limited edition.
They are. So you have, I don't know if I gave you a couple of them or whatever, but there's not a lot of those out there. And there's usually, and that was probably like the cool factor of it though.
Yeah.
But that was how it started, was like, holy, wow. I can't believe how many people called me just about a hat. And I wasn't even in the video.
Hats are emotional.
Hats are emotional.
It is.
I think that's the name of the podcast
episode. Hats are emotional. I don't know what it is. I know we probably got to wrap up soon, but I have to ask, just in general, dealing with suppliers, whether it's equipment or whatever, like what really...
How do we get to be a vendor of choice?
So for us, the big reason we have worked with our dealer for so long, for as long as we have, is the service is just there. When you need them, they are on top of it so quickly. And like they're right there. I mean, if they don't have somebody in the area and almost there already, they're sending somebody, you know? And if everybody's busy, I get it. Everyone's busy. If it's going to be a few hours, fine. I understand that. I get it. Everybody's human. They're so good. And if they don't have a part that we need, they'll have it by morning. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the biggest thing for us, is the downtime. Sometimes you break something specific, the whole operation shuts down.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, so that's incredibly frustrating, but you also have to see it from their point of view. They can't have every single part on hand at all times with somebody available to fix it 24/7.
So when you think of, you know, just vendors in general that you work with, whether it's trucks or truck parts or obviously chemical or what, you know, just any type of vendor that you do business with, what are some of those key things that are important to you to get a repeat business?
Personal relationship is one, for sure. But I also have personal relationships with businesses that aren't very quick, mm-hmm, at certain things. Sometimes you just need something done quicker, mm-hmm, than they're going to get it done. And so the timeliness, the speed that they're going to get it done can be important as well.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of the biggest things. And when I say personal relationships, I would lump in with that, you know, just being able to trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that they, I guess, whatever they're going through, whatever they're fixing for you, they're going to make the right decision, or they would kind of have an understanding of what you really need to fix and what you'd expect them to do.
Yep.
If they don't, they'll contact you about it.
And you think of, you know, as a purchaser, what do you feel is important as a customer experience?
Service is number one. Quality is probably number two, because I'm a pretty big believer that a lot of times you're going to get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I guess that would put price next, you know, cause you can't factor out price, cause there's obviously times where price is a huge factor. There's other times where, maybe you're going to pay a little bit more for something, but if you think that the service and the quality of it's better, you get what you pay for.
Can you think of a bad customer experience that you've had in any transaction that you've done, anything in the last year or two, that sticks in the back of your head?
I did have an issue a couple of years ago with our local tire shop.
Yes.
They also do mechanical work, and we were going on a trip with my wife's Suburban. So this is not an agriculture thing.
Yep.
But I brought it in there, and I wanted like three things done. I don't even remember exactly what it was. Probably tires and alignment, and I wanted them to stiffen something up in the rear end because we were pulling a heavy camper.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
And it was like we were going on the trip in a week. So I brought it to them a week ahead of time. They knew it was coming. And everything was pulling teeth with them, like they didn't understand what I was asking for. It was the strangest thing. And then I got it back, and basically all they did was in alignment. Like nothing else on my list after talking to them multiple times. It was so frustrating.
Communication.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know the guy's name, and I know who he was that screwed it all up, but I'm not going to throw him too directly under the bus.
What's your line?
The money's always in the follow-up.
Yep.
Show me the money. It's in the follow-up.
Yep.
So are you thinking about wrapping up?
What do you want to say something?
I do. Because it kind of got glanced over when you were talking about your start in social media.
Yeah.
You know, and you had said you came out and you did the True Set video on the 2730, and you gave me the hat,
mm-hmm,
and like you realized all the reach and stuff. I'll get a little bit mushy, but I just want to say that, like, I love what you're doing, and I love the fact that you recognized all that, because there's so many people that I work with that don't recognize that, and so many companies that are like, well, why would I work with you when I can just buy another magazine ad for $40,000? Why would I bring something to you to put in a YouTube video when I could just pay a production company to create a video for $300,000?
I had the same conversation over lunch today.
Yeah. And Sam recognized that from the beginning, and he ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's taken full advantage of that. And you've done an awesome job.
But it legitimately changed. I don't think, like, you think about the butterfly effect of this. I don't think if I had never met you, or if you didn't exist, I wouldn't have a podcast. I wouldn't work at Kibble. Like that changed the direction of my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrifying when you say that.
It is, like, it's kind of heavy.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But I didn't do Instagram. I didn't care about Instagram. But then you tagged me in like one story, and I had 1,000 followers the next day, and I was like, there's something to take advantage of here. Mm-hmm. It sounds bad, but there's something to run with right now. Well, you think about all the kids that.
Mm-hmm.
See you farming and think farming is cool. I took it a little bit different direction, and I saw the reach that you had on social media with what you were doing, and I guarantee I ain't the only one. They saw what you were doing and thought, this is something that they can run with that. There's something there. And so I ran with it, and here
exactly.
I am.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people on YouTube or Instagram or TikTok that have done the same. They've looked to you.
Yeah, sure. That's a better way of saying it. Like, I didn't start the podcast for Sam. I didn't start his social media. Like, Sam took that mm-hmm. idea, right? And he, like, you did that for yourself.
Because there's...
Should we hug now?
We can kiss later. you see all these people that you connected with, and then you're like, but there's an opportunity that we can connect with them in the same way. And so, I don't know. It's been cool, because I never thought that I would be a guy that would get recognized at a farm show or in public or in a liquor store in Virginia, Minnesota.
It's awkward.
Yeah.
What were you doing in Virginia, Minnesota?
We have a cabin up there. And some guy was just
staring
at me.
So it wasn't a hockey tournament?
No.
Oh.
He was cutting trees.
I was just on my way up to the cabin, and this guy is staring at me, like, weirdly. And I go, hi.
I'm 6'10".
Yeah.
And he goes, have I seen you on YouTube? I go, maybe. I don't know. He goes, do you know Millennial Farmer? I go, I do know Millennial Farmer. He goes, I've seen you on YouTube. I was like, well, see you later.
I like how your facial expression and the way you put that to the mic made it seem like you were really going to throw some knowledge at that guy.
And he even almost came like a southern draw to that dude.
That's weird, because he's from northern Minnesota. Yeah. So it would have been like,
should have a little bit of Norwegian tint on.
Have I seen you on the YouTube? I have a Google TV.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Oh,
nice.
Boy.
Oh, geez. One last thing. Sam Jensen's not here, and he's...
He misses you.
He's a critical part of the team. Yeah. Can you, like, throw some sort of, like, call out to him? I don't... You can do whatever you want.
Hello, Sam.
God, that was nice.
Sam, I miss you. I wish you were here in the breakfast nook with us at this hotel, which used to be a phone company.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at Kibble Equipment. I am at Kibbleman Sam. Chris is at Horob, H-O-R-O-B, on the X. He is at Chris Horob on Instagram.
I'm like four people away from hitting 1,000.
Oh, and it's a big milestone for you. Yeah. So if you have Twitter, just go follow Chris, so he'll feel better when he hits 1,000 followers.
Sex.
Yeah. We should check as soon as we turn the mics off. Maybe I could be the 1,000th.
You'll get a T-shirt.
Twitter's still a thing?
It's X.
It's called the X now.
Okay. I didn't think.
Sorry, I screwed that up. And then Zach, you're at MN Millennial Farmer.
Also, my Facebook got hacked.
Oh, that's.
Oh, crazy. Yeah, you turned into.
That was gone.
You were really into fashion.
How'd that happen? Would you click on something?
It's a longer story than we have time for. Okay, we've been here for a while.
We can talk.
Breakfast will be served here shortly.
We were hacked in a very sophisticated way. It was kind of. There's a lot more to it than just my Facebook got hacked.
Your phone call? No.
Yeah. It's all kind of.
It was a dirty
scheme. As we record this, I think we got our Facebook back. And when I say we, I mean my wife, Becky, got our Facebook back.
She talked to Mark?
She talked to Mark.
Okay.
Yep. She was like, hey, Mark, it's Beck. We got a problem.
You had a fresh feed this morning that I seen.
Actually, from it looked like from me
on Facebook.
It said I'm back.
So you guys check it. Actually, do this.
And that's what it said.
I think you're right. Actually, yeah, so
I seen Chet answered something on it.
The funny part about this is I still cannot get into Facebook. I have not seen anything since Monday on my phone. So one of you bring it up here. I want to see what's on. Look at that, 570 comments. We're back.
Would you look at that?
We're back. So you got to watch that video that you pulled up right there. I'll give you a backstory before you watch it.
Okay.
We got hacked on Monday. Everything was gone. It was all shut down. We're all bummed out trying to figure out how to get this back. Obviously, we've done a lot of social media for a long time. We can recognize the emails that are not legit, right? The scams that are coming through. Like, we get it.
Dubai Prince, yeah.
So we got an invite to a very popular podcast. Not one that I listened to, but a very popular podcast. And it came from an email that was very legit looking. It was not the, a lot of times you'll get like, hey, we want to invite you to this, and we are, you know, Nike at LMNOPXYZ 4XLB, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not legit. This came from a pretty legit email, and it was written in very plain English. The conjunctions were correct and everything.
Mm-hmm. They had periods. Yeah.
They had periods. Yeah. They used the conjunctions, the contractions. It was all there.
Adjectives and adverbs made sense.
Yeah. Everything about it. And I was like, man, I think that's a really legit podcast. So I Googled it, and sure enough, like, it's a massive podcast. Not one that I listened to, obviously, or I wouldn't have had to Google it. But anyway, so we communicated back and forth a few times. We set it up that I was going to be on the podcast like 6 weeks from that time. Well, if this is a hacker, they're not waiting 6 weeks. They want to get in tomorrow. So I wasn't even thinking about it. Like, we're 6 weeks from now, we got this scheduled deal we're going to do with this podcast. So 6 weeks go by. We connect with them online and find out that we're going to do this through Facebook. Well, that's not that weird. I've done a few podcasts through the different social medias. But we had to click a few things to allow it to share on both pages at the same time kind of deal. And we were kind of in the middle of doing it. Becky was helping get it set up, and they're clicking through. And it was like 5 minutes into it, and something kind of tipped us off that I think we both got the feeling all of a sudden that something wasn't right.
You got the ick?
Yeah, it was just like, what was that about? Like, they said something a little off, or something made us question if there was a red flag. And the red flag went off way more for my wife than it did me. And I found out afterwards what she was doing, but she was keeping this guy on the phone, like on this Zoom call, as she was in the background, like, changing our passwords and everything, because somebody had tried to log into all of our stuff from New York City. At the same time, we were on the phone with this guy as we were going through all this. And so, and I didn't see that part because it popped up on her phone. Like, it prompted on her phone.
Yeah, she was getting the emails.
She got the notification. This is not legit. And I think I got a little bit of that feeling, but she knew it. But we were on the phone with him at the same time on a Zoom call, so we couldn't communicate it to each other. But anyway, she was in the background trying to keep him on the call. Well, she was she was onto him to keep him from, like, if we'd have hung up, he'd have known we were totally onto him. But I think he had people working in the background because it happened so fast. He was the guy that could speak very clear English. Mm. The other guys were running the computers behind the scenes on this. Anyway, they got into everything. They were in our Wi-Fi, on our main computer, potentially on our security system, on multiple computers, on multiple platforms.
When you probably had like password keepers and stuff like that, so they were on that?
Everything.
They had that too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Everything. So we were scrambling. So anyway, but we didn't know that till the other day, because in the meantime, 2 weeks had gone by and we're like, okay, like, crisis averted, we're safe. Nothing's going on here. And then a Monday at 3 o'clock, all of a sudden I got 200 texts, DMs, phone calls like, hey, something's going on with your Facebook account. And it was all hacked. And then the goofy stuff started happening with everything at the same time. And Becky's been working on it like crazy for 48 hours, and it looks like now we might be back. Because we had a verified account with Facebook with almost 600,000 followers. And so you would think there'd be some sort of representation there that you could get in touch with. And I think she did.
Mark,
yeah. Yeah, so I am hoping we're back.
Nice.
Between now and when this comes out, I have no idea what might happen.
Trust no one.
I think we're wrapping it up.
Yes.
So, already?
Already.
You've been ready to go for an hour and a half.
We need a steak.
This has been the Everything Egg and then some.
Podcast.
Well.
See you later.
Nailed it. Oh my gosh. That was...